Book 12. How the two armies fought before the wall, and how Hector broke down the gate. While Patroclus was looking after the wounded man, a masked fight was going on outside, and it seemed that the moat was not to keep out the Trojans. That moat with the wall above it which the Danaans had made to protect themselves and their ships, but forgot the sacrifices which were due to the gods. The gods did not consent to the building, and therefore it did not stand long. While Hector lived and Achilles nursed his anger and the city of Priam was unsacked, so long that great wall stood. But when the best men of Troy were killed with many of the Achaeans, and those who were left sacked the city of Priam in the 10th year, and the Achaeans had sailed away, then Poseidon and Apollo determined to smother the wall. All the rivers which flow down from Ida to the sea, Rhesos and Heptaporos, Carisos and Rhodios, Grenicos, Anasipos, Scamandros, and Simois, where shields and helmets had fallen in heaps, and the bodies of brave men, all these rivers they led upon it, turning their streams together. For 9 days the flood poured over the wall, and torrents of rain fell unceasing, that the sea might sooner swallow it up. Earthshaker himself guided the waters with his trident, until he had swept away all the foundations of logs and stones which the Achaeans had laid with such labor. Then he made smooth the shore of the Hellespont, and covered it over with sand again. When he had smothered the wall, he turned back the rivers into the courses where they had run before. But that was to come in the future. For the time being, war and uproar blazed about the strong-built wall, and spears rattled against the stones. The Argives, driven by the whip of Zeus, were cooped up among their ships, for fear of Hector, that great master of panic, and he fought on and on like a furious tempest. You have seen a lion or a wild boar in a crowd of dogs and huntsmen turning to bay in desperate fury while they stand like a long wall and let fly their spears in volleys. The stout heart of the beast neither fears nor trembles, but his own courage is his death. He wheels round again and again and tries the line of men. Wherever he charges, the line gives way. So Hector ranged along his lines, hieing them on to cross the moat, but the horses would not go. They stood whinnying on the edge, for they feared that wide ditch. It could not be jumped, and it could hardly be crossed, for both banks were steep, and sharp stakes were set along the edge, many stakes, thick stakes, to keep the enemy away. A horse with a car to pull could hardly get within, but the footmen were all eager to do it. Then Polydamas came to Hector's side and spoke. "Hector, and you, the leaders of our armies, it is madness to drive horses across a moat. This moat can hardly be crossed at all. The sides are set with sharp stakes, and there is the wall beyond. No chariots can go down there or fight there. The place is too narrow, and we shall only be hurt. If it is the will of Zeus Thunderer to destroy the enemy out and out, that would be just my own wish, that the Achaeans might perish inglorious far from their home. But if they turn upon us and drive us back from the ships, and if we get entangled in that deep ditch, I do not think one will be left to take the news to Ilius." "Very well, then, listen to my advice. Let our men keep the horses ready beside the moat, and let us all follow Hector in a general attack. The Achaeans will not stand if the bonds of death are really made fast upon them." This advice seemed good to Hector, and he leapt from his car in his armor. So did all the others. Each told his driver to keep his team ready in its place near the moat. Then the fighting men sorted themselves into five divisions, each under its own leader. With Hector and Polydamas went the largest party and the best men, fully determined to break down the wall and to attack the ships. Cebriones was a third, for Hector had left a weaker man with his chariot. The next party was led by Paris and Alcathous and Agenor, the third by Helenus and Deiphobus, two sons of Priam, and Aeacus as third, Aeacus Hyrtacus' son, who had driven his pair of tall chestnuts from the river Salias. The fourth was under Aeneas Anchises' son, with the two sons of Antenor, Archelochus and Acamas, both masters of warfare. Sarpedon led the allied troops, and he chose to help him Glaucus and Asteropaeus, for he thought them the pick of all others. He was conspicuous himself above all. All these ranged themselves side by side behind their shields and marched straight for the enemy, determined not to desist until they fell upon the ships. Only one would not follow the profitable plan of Polydamas, and that was Aeacus, Hyrtacus' son. He did not leave driver and horses behind, but took them with him toward the ships. Poor fool! He was not to escape a cruel fate. He was not to return to Ilius in triumph with horses and car. Before that could be, his unhappy portion was to fall by the spear of Idomeneus Ducalaides. He aimed at the left of the camp, where the Achaeans used to drive in and out. The gates were not closed and bolted, but men were holding them wide open for any of their friends who might be seeking refuge. This place he chose on purpose, followed by his party, shouting and cheering, for they thought that nothing would stop them now from falling upon the ships. Poor fools. Two of the best men were in charge of the gates, Polypedes and Leontius, both sons of formidable Lapithans. One was the son of Pirithous himself. These two stood in front of the gates, like tall oak trees in the mountains, firm on their deep, strong roots, which face rain and tempest every day. There they stood firm in their strength to face the attack of Asios. The Trojans marched toward the wall with a loud clamor, holding up their ox hides about Prince Asios, Endiamenos, and Orestes, Adamas Asios' son, Thoon, and Enomios. Meanwhile, the two guardians from their post inside had been calling on their countrymen to repel the attack, but when they saw them beaten off and the Trojans coming on, they dashed in front of the gate like a pair of wild boars which receive a rout of men and dogs in the mountains. How they charged from both sides and crushed the brushwood all around, tearing it up by the roots! What a clatter of tusks is heard until they are struck down and killed! So their armor clattered about their breasts as the blows met them, for they fought desperately, trusting in their own strength and the men on the walls. These were throwing great stones upon the enemy, which fell like showers of hail when a boisterous wind drives the dark clouds before it. So the volleys were showered by defenders and assailants alike. Helmets and shields rang dry, battered by those millstones. Then Asios groaned and smacked his two thighs as he cried fretfully, "I do declare, Father Zeus, you are only another lover of lies. I did not think the Achaeans were brave enough to check our fury and stop our invincible hands. And here they are like a swarm of wasps or bees in a nest on a mountain path. They won't come out of their holes unless huntsmen come by, and then they defend their young ones. These men are only two, but they will not leave that gate till they kill or be killed." But Zeus paid no attention, for he meant to give Hector the credit of victory. Other parties were attacking the other gates, but I am not a god to tell the whole story, for the fire blazed all around the stone wall, and the Argives defended themselves desperately. All those gods who favored the Danaans were deeply distressed. Meanwhile, the two Lapithans were making a great fight. Polypedes ran his spear through the helmet of Damasus and tore through the skull and scattered the brains, so his fighting days were done. Next, he killed Pylon and Ormenos. Leontius hit Hippomachus through the belt, then he drew sword and, dashing through the throng, struck first Antiphates man to man and laid him flat. Menon, Iamenos, Orestes, one after another, he brought to the ground. While these two were stripping the slain, Hector's party were standing in doubt on the edge of the moat. This was the largest party, you remember, and the best men, and the most determined to make a breach and burn the ships. But they had seen an omen as they were about to cross. An eagle, flying high, skirted the army on the left, holding in his talons a serpent, alive and panting, dripping blood as it struggled. The serpent curved back his head and struck the eagle in the breast near the neck. The sharp pain made the eagle drop him, and he fell in the crowd of men, while the eagle shrieked and flew away on the wind. The Trojans shuddered when they saw the snake wriggling in their midst, and took it for a portent from Zeus. Then Polydamas said, "Hector, you always find fault with me in our assemblies when I give good advice. No man of the people is allowed to disagree by any means in council or in war. He must always support you. But now again, I will tell you what I think best. Don't let us go forward to fight these men for the ships. I think it will turn out like this omen, as surely as this was an omen meant for us. Here is an eagle flying high, skirting the army on the left, carrying a huge serpent in his talons, alive and dripping blood. Drops him at once and can't take him home for his young ones. Just so we, if we do breach the wall and the enemy give way, still we shall travel back in disorder the same road, and we shall leave many of our people behind killed in the fight. That's how a diviner of any credit would interpret this omen if he knew anything about omens." Hector frowned at him and said, "I don't like that way of speaking, Polydamas. You know better than that. But if you really mean what you say, you have simply gone out of your wits. Forget the commands of Zeus Thunderer, is that your advice? Forget the promise he gave me himself? Your advice is to obey a flying bird. What is a bird to me? I care nothing for birds, whether they fly east to the rising sun or whether they fly west to the darksome gloom. We had better obey the counsels of Zeus Almighty, who rules over mortals and immortals both. The only bird that's always right is fight for home and country. Fight! Why are you afraid of a fight? If all the rest of us are killed in this battle, there's no fear that you will be killed. You have not the pluck to stand and fight. But if you shirk your part, or if you try to persuade anyone else to shirk, you shall die on the spot. Here is my spear ready. So Hector led the way, and his men followed, shouting and cheering. Then Zeus Thunderer sent forth from Ida a blast of wind which carried the dust into the faces of the Achaeans. The Achaeans were bewitched by this, and it brought success to Hector and the Trojans. Trusting to his omens and his strength, they assailed the wall. They tore out the stones, they dragged down the breastworks, they levered up the buttress beams, which had been sunk in the ground to support the walls, and dragged them out, and then they expected to make a breach. But the defenders would not give way. They put up their ox hides for new breastworks, and met the enemy with volleys as they tried to climb the wall. Aeus Big and Aeus Little were everywhere, urging the men on the wall to resist and cheering them on. If they saw anyone weakening, they were ready with kind words or hard words. "Now, my good fellows, there's work for all, the best men, the middlings, the not-so-goods, for we are not all alike, you know that yourselves. Let no man turn his back when he hears a shout. Forward, all! Cheer one another on, then Zeus Olympian with his thunder and lightning may help us drive back the enemy to their city." So they went shouting along the line, and the air was full of stones hurled by both armies, Trojans against Achaeans, Achaeans against Trojans, and there was a terrible din along the wall. It was like a storm on a winter's day. When Zeus has brought up a dense cloud and showers upon mankind his volleys of snow, he lulls the winds and pours until he covers high mountains and cliffs, clover crops and the fat plow land. Down it pours on harbor and beach and sea as far as the place where the wave beats up and stops it, but all else is covered with a heavy sheet of fallen snow. Yet the Trojans would never have made their breach had not Zeus sent his own son Sarpedon like a lion pouncing on the cattle. He held his shield before him, a round shield of hammered bronze, lined with several layers of hide which were fastened to the rim all around with gold wire. Holding this with his two spears in hand, he moved forward like a mountain lion, long starved and now greedy to leap into the fold and try the taste of mutton. Even if he finds the drovers there with dogs and spears defending their charge, he is determined not to leave that place without one try. Either he gets in and catches one, or the quick hand comes first with a lance. That was the spirit of Sarpedon, and he said to his friend Glaucus, "Why have you and I the seat of honor at home, Glaucus? Why have we the best portions, cups always full, and all treat us like something greater than men? And that fine estate on the banks of Xanthos, orchards and wheatlands of the best? For that we are bound to stand now before our people in the scorching fires of battle, and then the brave men in the ranks can say, 'Sure enough, there is nothing mean in our kings and governors. They eat the best of meat, and they drink the best of wine, but there is strength in them, too. That's clear, for they always fight in front.' We must not be laggards. If to escape from this battle meant that we should never grow old and never die, I should not be fighting here in front, and I would not send you forward to win your name. But now, since whatever we do, 10,000 chances of death are about us, which no mortal man can escape or avoid, forwards, whether we are to give fame to another or he to us." Glaucus was no less ready than he, and the two marched on leading their men. Menestheus was the man in charge of that part of the wall, and he shuddered to see them come in that grim fashion. He looked along the wall to see if one of the captains was there to help them, and then he saw standing Aeus Big and Aeus Little, with Teucros just arrived from the camp close by. But he could not make them hear. There was such a din, the whole air full of noise from battered shields and helmets and gates, for the gates were shut fast and the enemy up against them trying to break them down. So he sent his herald Thoates to Aeus. "Off with you, Thoates, run and call Aeus, or rather both of them. That would be the best thing of all, or we shall all be destroyed here before long. The Lycian chiefs are here against us in force, and they are a real hurricane, as we know from experience. If they are pressed hard yonder, let Telamone and Aeus come alone, yes, and let him bring Teucros to do the shooting." Off ran the messenger along the wall until he found his men, and said quickly, "You, sir, my lord Telamonian, and you, sir, Oeliades, my commander begs you to come there, if only for a little while, both of you if you can. That will be the best thing of all. Or they will all be destroyed there before long. The Lycian chiefs are there against them in force, and they are a real hurricane, as you know from experience. But if you are hard-pressed here also, at least let Telamonian Eos come along and bring Teucros to do the shooting. Eos was quite ready and said without wasting words to little Eos,
You two stay here, you and Lycomedes, and take command. I will go there and support them. I will come back at once when I have done what I can for them.
He set out at once with his brother Teucros, and Pandion carried the bow. They passed within the wall to Menestheus's tower and found them hard-pressed, for the Lycian leaders were climbing the breastworks like a black tornado. The newcomers joined in, and then there was a noise. Eos killed his man first, Epicles, a companion of Sarpedon. He took a huge jagged stone, which lay on the top of the heap which was ready for use inside the breastwork. A man could not easily lift that stone with both hands, such as men are today, were he ever so strong, but Eos lifted it high and swung it, smashed the horned helmet, and broke the bones of the man's head into a mess. The breath left his bones, and he took a header off the wall. Glaucus, in climbing the wall, exposed one shoulder. Teucros let fly at him and put an end to his fighting. He went to the rear as quietly as he could, that no enemy might notice and boast over his defeat. But Sarpedon did notice, and it grieved him greatly. Yet he did not forget his battle. He stabbed Alcmaeon, Thestor's son, and pulled out his spear. Alcmaeon followed the spear and fell flat under his clashing armor. Then Sarpedon grasped the breastwork with his strong hands and pulled it right down, leaving a wide gap where many men could pass. There Eos and Teucros met him together. Teucros hit the shield sling which ran over his breast, but Zeus saved his son from instant death in that place. Eos leapt at him and stabbed at the shield. The point did not go through, but made him stagger and check. He moved back a little, but he did not leave the battle, for he still hoped for victory. He wheeled about and shouted,
Men, why do you hold back? I may be strong, but it is hard for me to make a breach and clear the road all by myself. Come along, men, more hands make better work.
The men were ashamed at their great leader's reproach and pushed on harder than ever. On the other side, the Argives strengthened their forces within the walls, and it was a desperate business. The Lycians were not strong enough to make a breach and clear the way to the ships. The defenders could not repel them from the wall now they had got a footing there. It was like a quarrel about boundaries on a common field when two men with measuring rods in a narrow space are disputing for their shares. So these two parties stood with the breastwork between them, beating over the top with shields and bucklers and fringe-fluttering leather targets. Many a thrust pierced the flesh right through the shield, or when one turned and showed a bare back. Everywhere wall and breastwork were bespattered with blood of Trojans and Achaeans inside and out. But nothing could drive the Achaeans back. The battle hung in the balance as truly as when an honest workwoman holds her scales in hand, weight in one and wool in the other, to earn a meager wage for her children. At last Zeus gave the upper hand to Hector Priamides, who was to be the first man within the Achaean wall. Hector shouted in a great voice to his men,
Up now, Trojans! Break down this wall and set fire to the ships!
All heard the cry and charged over the wall in a body. In a moment they were climbing over the top, spear in hand. But Hector seized a stone that lay before the gates, thick at the butt and running to a point. Two men could not easily lever that stone from the ground into a cart, not two of the strongest as men are now, but he managed it easily alone. Zeus made it light in his hands. As a shepherd easily carries a ram's fleece in one hand and makes little of the weight, so Hector lifted that stone and carried it to the gates. There were two tall wings, strongly built and held fast within by two crossbars moving round on a central bolt. Hector stood close, setting his legs well apart to get good purchase for his blow, and drove the stone at the middle. Both hinges broke, the stone fell within by its weight, the two wings groaned, and the crossbars could not hold them, but they were thrown apart by the blow. Then Hector leapt within, his face like sudden night, his eyes blazing. Light flashed from his armor. Two spears were in his hands. No man alive could have checked that rush. He wheeled about and called his men to come on. Some climbed the wall, some poured in by the gate. The Danaans fled to their ships. There was turmoil, an uproar, unceasing.